Professor Daniel Rolfe, University of Cambridge Judge Business School, thank you very much indeed for talking to the podcast series today here at Bloomberg in London at the Cambridge Risk Debates, Perspectives on the Future of the Energy Sector, Energy Investment and Insurance Risks. Thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you very much.
Let's begin by having a look at the title of the debate. I mean, first of all, we heard about renewables, the targets for those, and, if you like, the tension in the targets in Europe for the emissions too. We have a complex mix of policies that perhaps aren't always going in the same direction at the same time.
Yes, I think some of the other speakers made that point, but if I can re-summarise. On the one hand, we'd like to encourage renewables, development of technologies that perhaps we don't do very well at the moment, but that same encouragement of those policies, we fund them, we give them special tariffs, we give them special financial breaks to process the carbon price because they're low-carbon technologies. That means that our other technologies, like nuclear, that are zero carbon effectively, if you ignore the installation cost, are disadvantaged. And so how do you square that circle?
As I say, within that mix have Europe now saying, well, if you like, better our targets, other countries wanting to have longer to achieve them. Then we have Fukushima and Japan, Germany opting out of nuclear energy. We are, if you like, at a crossroads in terms of not just European energy policy, but, if you like, global energy policy too.
Yes, Fukushima exposed latent concerns about nuclear energy, which I don't think will ever actually go away. It's a question of addressing all of these concerns at the same time, in the sense that, and here I'm thinking of David Mackay's brilliant book on renewable energy without the hot air, if you want to take one technology off the table, you're going to have to replace it by another one. So it's easy to say I don't like nuclear, and I'm suspicious myself of nuclear, but I'm also suspicious that we may not be able to meet our energy needs without it.
And you were the one person who said that technology wasn't a problem. We had some people thinking technology could save us and comparing us with China and the tiger economies and the incredible things they're achieving there with new buildings and energy sustainability. But you thought technology wasn't the problem, perhaps governments and people were?
Yes, I guess you're quoting my own words and I'm forced to defend myself, but I think my main concerns at this point in time are less about the kinds of technology and developing them and encouraging them to develop in such a way that they're competitive, they're efficient. I'm less concerned about that, and I'm more concerned that the necessary high-level structures, let's say across the European Union, to have a supergrid that connects our wind in the UK to a wind in other parts of Europe, won't actually get off the ground. So it doesn't matter whether wind is a good technology or not if we can't connect it.
We had a look at what those developing countries I mentioned earlier, China, Brazil, are up to. And it almost seems that if we in the UK and civilised countries, if you like, started again from scratch, we might be able to achieve more. You spoke of them getting ahead of us, didn't you? And do you think we should see it like that, or perhaps just learning lessons from each other?
It's food for thought. Would our own development in energy and renewables and low carbon in particular be stimulated not just by our own desire to preserve the planet, if you like, but the fact that the countries existing who can perhaps do it better than us are stealing an economic march? And that was a debate around whether, say, Brazil and China, who are perhaps better positioned to do this because they might be investing in greater new infrastructure. So it's not a case of adapting infrastructure, which is expensive, but to build it from the ground up. Now, if that gives them a competitive edge because they're better at developing those technologies because they're using them and they have cheaper energy overall and more carbon-efficient energy overall, that might push the older economies, as it were, in the right direction. That's not something I've really given much thought to, but I think it's a very intriguing idea.
Well, if we look at what the panel said in this sort of hour and a half long session with questions afterwards here at Bloomberg in London, Perspectives on the Future of the Energy Sector, Energy Investment and Insurance Risks. The debate was structured into unsustainability, predictions and the future. Any revelations that you've heard here? Perhaps I think the thing that comes across is just the complexity of operating in a global world. Even if you're in a 27-country Europe, getting everybody to act in the interests of a common good is tricky?
Yes, in terms of revelations, I think there was, in some sense, a lot more commonality amongst the speakers than there were differences. The point I mentioned before about perhaps a driver for clean energy coming from economic development outside the EU is an interesting point for me, so you could call that a small revelation or at least food for thought. More generally, the notion that you could have 27 competing regulatory systems around energy in EU just unfortunately fills me with trepidation.
And it doesn't give much hope to some kind of global energy consensus, which you almost think that perhaps a younger generation would have expectations of.
Unfortunately, I have to agree with you that I'm not holding my breath for something wonderful to happen on the regulatory or the governance front at the national to international levels, even though I think that's critical. And so a big question for all of us is, if we want to make progress in this area, how do we foster that national to international development?
And governments do have a role in that, don't they? Because we heard about how, you know, businesses think 18 months, you know, governments think 5 years to their next term in office. But if they lay down the right conditions for private investment and private companies to operate, and they, if you like, get the blue sky thinking right, we can, if you like, go off in the right direction at least.
Well, I'm not absolutely pessimistic. I think what we can imagine is that there's a development in three different ways. Commercially, government regulation, but I mean beyond national, and also in the constituents, and I'm thinking about ordinary people like myself. If those things are pushing eventually in the same direction, ordinary people fear what's going to happen to the planet. Governments realize they need to do something, and they know they'll be elected to do something. And finally, that process drives them to work with the people who will finance it, big business, pension funds, and so on. We can design instruments that do have the lifetime that commercial entities need. But I don't think these pieces can be developed separately. I think they have to somehow come co-developed. They have to be developed together over time.
Well, meanwhile, I'll make sure I walk to work and don't take the car, that I have a shower and not a bath, and that I switch off my immersion heater at night. Will that help?
I think it will, strangely. I know it's, think global and act local. I suspect if energy prices were much higher, for example, because there was a very high price of carbon, we would find ways of putting on an extra jumper, riding our bicycle, switching off the heater in that room that we're not using, and so on.
Professor Daniel Rolfe, thank you very much indeed for talking to the podcast series today here at Bloomberg in London at the Cambridge Risk Debate. It's been fun.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed myself.